Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a CadSource production. As entrepreneurs, we're all dealing with something, either directly or indirectly. It may be business related, it may be something happening today, or it may have something to do with health. In my family, my wife and two daughters have all been diagnosed with celiac disease. As we've attempted to learn more about celiac, we've come across some amazing people. That's why I am creating the Celiac Series. These people are taking celiac head on and they are building something special at the same time. They are entrepreneurs, they are creators, and they are courageous. This episode exists because of CadSource. CadSource is your content team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story? That's what we do. Content strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at CadSource, we exist to help you create and share amazing content. And yes, you should have a podcast. We'll help you. Learn more by visiting kezcontent.com. Whether you have celiac, know someone that has celiac, or want to learn more about celiac, I hope this series can provide insights and thoughts for you to explore more. While this is absolutely for the celiac community and for celiac awareness, it's also for people dealing with something, anything. We all are. No one is alone, and as entrepreneurs, we need to find ways to keep going, to have purpose, to share stories, and to connect. So we plan on featuring leaders to share their story and to then connect through those stories. It's all about content and connections. It just so happens this story and this series is about celiac. In this Celiac Series podcast episode, we feature Craig Pinto, the New York Area Development Officer at the Celiac Disease Foundation, also known as CDF. You can learn more about CDF at celiac.org. Craig has a master's in nonprofit management from NYU. He's a former college and professional football player and is a four-time Guinness Book World Record holder. Craig is dedicated to helping those with celiac disease thrive to live and feel their best and to raise money for CDF. As you'll soon hear, Craig is an entrepreneur with his battle, and he fights it every day. He is an inspiration, and I'm honored to have the opportunity to chat with Craig and to share that conversation with you. And with that, we welcome Craig Pinto. What I had thought about was, well, how can I help out in some way? Like I said, how can I help the celiac community in some small way? Because what I look for, or what we look for, is helping entrepreneurs. We believe every entrepreneur should have their own content platform and share their stories. What story that is, it could be their rags to riches. It could be how they persevered. It could be how they built a business, why they decided to do it. It could be about their health. It could be about their interest in sports or travel or leisure. Whatever those things are, I believe every entrepreneur should have their own content platform that has an interest in doing it. And we want to help do that. And whether it's a passion or an interest or something that's so impactful at your home or your business, I think you can talk about those things on a podcast like this one.
Right. Yeah.
And in any format that you want to do it. If you don't want to do audio, you want to write, you want to take pictures, any of it works. It all works and it all matters. It's all very important. And so the Celiac Series was sometimes like, well, I want to reach out and have these conversations with leaders in the celiac space, people who have gone through this, who've gone through these journeys, because here I am. I have a wife and I have three kids, but my two daughters all have celiac and I'm just trying to figure this thing out. I'm trying to understand it and I'm trying to help them and I want to help the community in any small way that I can. Like, what can we do? Right. And I know CDFs, they want to find a cure for celiac disease.
Right.
And so I want to have these conversations. And so when I was talking to CDF, your name had come up and then we had had some back and forth and we're dealing with the pandemic and all this craziness. And here we are having a conversation today. So thank you, Craig, for joining us on this podcast.
Absolutely, man. Thank you for including me and for inviting me on this. I appreciate it.
Yeah. You talk about celiac disease, Crohn's disease. There's a lot going on there. One thing that's been, I don't know what the word is, frustrating, fascinating, angering of someone being diagnosed with celiac. It took my wife 7 years and she wasn't just like taking guesses at it. She was seeing doctors, like prominent doctors out of state, right? The whole thing. And like, no, you don't have celiac disease. Or it didn't even come up most of the time. Until one day, it was just kind of like, let's take the celiac test. And there it was. And we're like, oh my God, this is what we've been looking for. And there's more to it than that. What was your journey like to finding out that you had celiac?
It's wild to hear that because I feel like I hear so many like similar stories about going in circles, looking for everything else possible. And then celiac is this like, oh my gosh. And it's like, just like found at the end, you know? Mm-hmm. So similar to that, you know, I had Crohn's diagnosed when I was 12. So at a young age, you know, I was dealing with Crohn's already. Around like 21, 22 is when I started getting sick again. And again, they passed it off as Crohn's flares, just something that was going on in my body. I was growing still at that point. There are even some doctors who thought it was the stress of being in college. Maybe I needed to go on some kind of like mental meds, anti-anxiety medication, stuff like that. And again, it was the same thing. There was one nurse who I had seen who, after describing the symptoms and how I felt, it was like, and again, this was in 2000, where she was just kind of like, let's look for celiac disease. I know it's not common. It wasn't very like looked at by the doctors. They didn't even, I had nothing done, no blood tests, no endoscopy, nothing to check for it. And she was kind of like, and I keep in touch with her to this day, I call her like my angel in that sense, because everyone everywhere was just looking for a million other things or just prescribing medications or whatever it was. And he was just kind of like, it sounds like this. And once that happened, I was diagnosed with it. I went through a battery of tests. I was diagnosed with celiac. And I could tell you, like, I remember at first being like shell-shocked, especially figure 21-ish years ago. There weren't very many like Whole Foods or Trader Joe's or gluten-free, you know. And where I'm at, like on Long Island, we had the one like super hippie health and wellness food store, right? The only one in like a 20-mile radius who carried gluten-free bread and pasta. And like 21 years ago, it was like when you'd strain the pasta and it would just be like super thick. But it was just like the way it had to be. So kind of changing over that lifestyle was a little shell-shocking, you know, mentally. I'd say it was more mental than physical at that point, because physically for the first little while, when they described, you know, going gluten-free and what to look for the first couple of weeks, I actually kind of got energy back into my body. Like I felt like I was waking up without feeling like I had a ton of bricks like in my body, and I was moving around and I was kind of like a little less like brain fog and those symptoms. But what ended up happening was becoming so hyper-focused on foods, and also again, having Crohn's, I almost started to see like food as like an adversary, and I didn't find enough gluten-free foods in places where I was eating. I would stay home and have like just plain chicken and a potato, right? Like, or vegetables. Just tying it all in, I was in college, I was playing football and ice hockey in college, right? And wanted to be an athlete or stay athletic, whatever it was. But I started losing weight like dramatically because, again, I was just unable to really find food as something that could help my body at that point, but more of a, like it would hurt my body. And I went from about 175, where so I ended up leaving. I was at Hofstra University where I was playing at, and I ended up leaving there at about 175, just to really focus on my health because I wasn't doing great mentally and physically. Within, I'd say, a year, I was down to about 135.
Wow.
137-ish. So I went from being a Division I college athlete and playing two sports at 175. I'm 5'8". So it was whatever it was in my body, but dropping down to about 130. I remember at 137, I think, was my lowest. But just kind of looking at like a shell of myself 12 months later after this diagnosis. So that was really like shocking, right? Like that was something for me that even when I look at, or I'll kind of like stumble on old pictures from around that time frame, and it's just like, gosh, like this thing that hits you. And again, I found Celiac Disease Foundation back then as this like support system where like local doctors are like, this is what it is, but we really can't help you outside of the diet, right? Then just kind of digging around on your own, they leave you to kind of your own devices, good or bad. And that was kind of the beginning of the journey there, right? Like I said, I left playing sports, I left school, and just focused on, at that point, figuring out how to get healthy and deal with Crohn's and with celiac. And, you know, having dealt with Crohn's for almost 10 years, that kind of took a back seat. Like that wasn't even in my mind at that point. And that was something that I've been on medication for Crohn's disease for 31 years. And that's something that once celiac hit, it was just like my life. It was like an obsession at that point.
Yeah. There's a lot in there, what you said. And you talked about food being your adversary. And I've seen this because so much of everyday life is based around the next meal or the meal itself. And it's frustrating when someone has celiac and then just trying to figure that out, right? It becomes a monumental event to figure out what's for dinner, whether you're going to the restaurant and the restaurant doesn't understand it, whether you're making something at home to make sure that it is gluten-free. And even the awareness and understanding of the people around it, whether it's someone in your close circle or again, the server, right? Someone at the grocery store, the friend's house that you go to understanding how serious this is. the medical community you bring up of like the local doctors not being able to help, it's kind of mind-blowing. And it really spoke to me when Marilyn Geller was talking on the Celiac Project podcast. And I think her husband went to Stanford Medical School, right? One of the top medical schools in the country. And he said they talked about it maybe for 10 minutes. Like, I don't know if it's anyone's fault per se. I don't know what to say about all that. It's just that no wonder there's such a lack of understanding about celiac disease.
Right.
And so when someone like yourself is coming out and you're trying to figure out what's going on here, to even be tested for it, first of all, is like not normal. And then you do get tested and you find it out. And then there's this period, and I've heard this as well. I think it was in the University of Chicago, the doctor that runs that, talking about they try to get that next appointment when someone is officially diagnosed with celiac disease to get them and their family in because she's working with children. There's this, what do you do from here? And my wife's been doing it. So she's been getting her master's in applied nutrition at Canisius College in Buffalo, New York, and is working towards this. And one of the things that she's really focused on right now is that time period of whether you're like possibly going to get diagnosed or think you might have it to being diagnosed to that early stage period of that life adjustment. She calls it the switch and called celiac switch. And that's something that she's really focused in on because you see it because she's just dealt with it, not only for herself, but then our two daughters. And it's something that it's not even just here. We see other people as well, but there's just this, like, what are you supposed to do? And that's why CDF is so important, to have communities like that to help someone like yourself, my wife, kids, and whoever else might be going through it. But all of that is super frustrating. And then you bring up, and we go in all these different directions. You know, there's so many autoimmune diseases, right? My wife, same thing, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia. You talk about Crohn's disease. Like, a lot of times you run into people and they have multiple things going on. And it's like this impossible puzzle to figure out.
Yeah. And think about that too. Like, if you don't undiagnosed, and the longer you're going undiagnosed, the more damage it's doing and the long-term potential harm it's causing, right? So there's that trick to having people find it early and look for it early to make sure none of those other things kind of cascade after that. So it really is frustrating to hear. Sometimes it's frustrating. I'm sure your wife can attest to it. Sometimes the dismissiveness of saying that you need something gluten-free, or when you go out to a restaurant or whatever it is, and kind of the like the carelessness sometimes of, I need something gluten-free and I'm serious about it, and you still get whatever you're getting and you're like, holy cow, like, this is my life's health here. I'm not trying to be like a pain about what I'm doing. So yeah, so I totally get the frustration. And who knows, like, I'm not even sure if it's, at one point it's like, is it trivialized? Because at one point it was like a celebrity thing, right? Like, I'm going gluten-free for like a fad diet. So did it become trivialized for the celiac community who needs it for health, right? For their livelihoods. Did it take a backseat to people saying, oh, like, gluten-free because I'm going to lose weight, or, you know, whatever it might be. And all of a sudden, here's this pocket of people who are like, wait a minute, like, this is no joke. I'll show you losing weight. Like, I lost 40 pounds, right? And that wasn't because of a gluten-free diet. That was because of health issues caused by celiac disease. So there are some frustrations about it that you still, 21 years later, you're still like, why is there? And again, but I think the most important thing is the support system.
Yeah.
Like, when you don't have the local stores or the doctors or whomever might be well-versed in it, having your family really care about it, I think helps. You know, because for me, a big turning point also was, I have a big Portuguese family, right? And family holidays are enormous. Yeah. And food from everywhere. Each family brings in a different couple plates. And once our holidays started becoming inclusive of family members making gluten-free food, even though at the time it was myself, my sister, and my mother out of 40 of us, but then everyone started understanding that this is separate and aside of what's going on. And then it started to build that comfort again and that kind of acceptance and understanding of what was going on. And that helped to have like family really kind of rally around and show support. And then you have CDF on top of that, being able to kind of have that kind of support is beyond helpful, you know?
Yes. You mentioned advocates, and I think we need advocates in all these different places, or someone with celiac needs the advocate. That advocate might be a family member that lives in your house, be a sibling, it could be CDF, it could be people that are out there, it could be the restaurant advocating to say, no, this is very important. If someone comes in here, and I ordered dinner the other night and it means so much. It's these little things when they ask, are there any allergies in this order? Are there anybody with food allergies? And when you say celiac, you know pretty quickly, if they look at you strange, you're like, what is that? Versus, oh, we got it, right? Because there's a restaurant here in Charlotte, North Carolina called Burton's, and they're very serious about it. They ask you about it. If you order something that is gluten-free, someone different, the manager actually brings it out. So with gloves on, and it's few and far between though. And every place is different, right? I know in California, I've been in Portland, Maine, they do a really good job with it and other parts of the country, but advocating is a big thing. And that's why I think these conversations we're having, it's not just for the person that has or may have celiac, it's for everyone around them and having this understanding that this is real, this does exist, here are the stories. They go on and on and on, and it's extreme. And I think that's why it's so important to share these things, just like in many other areas. But it's interesting because there is, like you talked about in the medical field, this lack of something going towards it because maybe we can't throw a drug at it right now. So you go to the doctor's office, and let's say the symptoms are related to stomach. So let's just throw irritable bowel syndrome at it. That's what you have. And I can give you a medicine for that.
I've heard like everything, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
But CDF is in DC, in Washington, DC, right? They're lobbying for this and understanding those types of things of, it's way bigger than just a conversation, but those conversations matter, right? This individual conversation does matter. It just has to go to these next levels. And what have you seen being a part of CDF as far as celiac disease is concerned?
I can tell you, having, like I said, harping back on the 20-ish years of knowing CDF, I can tell you there have single-handedly been, and I attribute 99% of it to Marilyn Geller, being such a driving force and kind of like a powerhouse, right? Like the way I look at it, I'm fortunate to be a part of CDF. I work for them now. Before working for them, I admired them. You know what I mean? Like I met Marilyn 8 years ago at a conference at Columbia University. And it's a funny story. Her son was in high school at the time, and he's a high school football player, right? So we had something in common. We were kind of like chatting it up about football. And I had just done a couple like the Guinness record things with kicking. So we started a conversation, and Marilyn was there. Elaine Monarch was there from CDF. And I was like starstruck, right? Like I knew who I was around these people, and they didn't know what effect they had in my life at that point, right? Like that was something I kept to myself just because I keep to myself. And I'm sitting there thinking like where I had been to where I was, right? Thanks to CDF. And I'm sitting with these like power players here. And I was kind of bouncing around, and Marilyn's son and I, we ended up taking off. We went to this, there was a gluten-free place that opened up in the city. They had like gluten-free cupcakes and cookies and whatever. So we were all excited. We went down there, got food, and you know, hung out for a little while. And then a couple years later, I was in California, I reached back out to Maryland. So I had a small organization I had started out here on Long Island, which again was really to help kind of local families understand celiac disease and really kind of get people together, really. The most important thing for me really is whether you have it for a day or whether you have it for 50 years, it doesn't make a difference. Like we want you to be part of the community. We want you to understand you have a community, right? There's no sort of like timeline of importance of where you stand. But if you have celiac disease, you're part of this community and we know what you're going through. So that's really where, again, working with or reaching out to then Marilyn at that point, I spoke to her and let her know, hey, I was thinking about kind of shutting down shop with my own foundation on Long Island. And is there any way I could help out? And Marilyn, I'm telling you, man, like, she is just a powerhouse. And to me, it's the inspiration behind that, because working with Marilyn, with Deb, and with Laura at Celiac Disease Foundation from 3,000 miles away, I feel I'm thankful to work for them because they still teach me so much about kind of this advocacy and how hard they work. And obviously, this is all behind the scenes because like what they put out on social media or whomever they might work with, that's like the end product, right? That people will see that. But being able to be a part of it behind the scenes and the work that they put into this and the hours they put into this, it is incredible. And like that for me, that's why I'm like thankful to be a part of that group. Sometimes you find too, like sometimes you'll find on social media, obviously people trying to help people, but then sometimes conversations can go sideways. People have comments. People will start throwing shade at other people for whatever their personal reason might be. And you almost find this fracture in the community within our own community. And I always look at them, it's just this straight line, right, of a goal. And that's what, to me, is the most kind of, again, like I'll say, I use the word inspiring with it because it is. It's like there's a goal to achieve here. And regardless of like slings and arrows and whatever it might be, the goal is for the community, right? It's not personal goal. It's not anything. And I see that as part of the community. I see that as people who I want to be around, right? And people who I want to work for and kind of stand on the front lines for too. So I could go on about CDF and how long they've meant something to my life, but on the inside, knowing the people that are at the controls of this, it's even for me, it's even better. Better than I anticipated, better than I thought.
Yeah, that authentic behind the scenes of what you just shared. I mean, it matters because, like I said before, I'm trying to figure this thing out as we go. And where do we turn? Who do we talk to? Like I mentioned before, Celiac Project and Mike Frolickstein and Cam Weiner, like they've been great resources. They've been a friend. When my youngest daughter was getting her endoscopy, it was during the pandemic and only one of us can go in the hospital. My wife went, so I'm standing outside. Who do I reach out to but Mike? And he was there to help and talk about it. You know, he had been through this. His Amazon Prime documentary, it's a documentary you can get in many different places. Just sharing these stories, it was no different than if my parents or my mother-in-law was able to see these things and to understand, like, what does this mean? They're coming to our house for dinner. What does that mean? What do we do? But having the educational tour, the resource, the people at CDF to see that they're a part of this program where there's possible drugs that are out there and they're doing studies on this thing. There's summits that they're doing. There's so much there. Or you're at the grocery store and you're trying to figure out, can I buy this? There's confusion. Just this week, even my daughter was at her friend's house and they were Lay's potato chips for whatever reason. There's Lay's potato chips. My daughter had already looked it up. They're gluten-free. They're great. And there was this dill pickle flavor potato chip. And this is confusing because then you go to a website, it doesn't say it's gluten-free. So it's not certified gluten-free, but it is, and you'll be fine. The Lay's website says it's not. And it's like, you kind of have to pick, my wife and I were talking about, you almost have to pick the philosophy. Said it's black or white, right? You can't be anything in the middle. We don't know what that is. But here it is. It's like, there's confusion. I'm in these Facebook groups and you read what people are asking and how do people respond to this versus that? Have they ever had this food versus that food? Is really difficult. But to have a resource and like a tool, like you're saying at CDF, and to know the people behind it, this is real. And CDF is a real organization that's really trying to make this happen. And I've talked to numerous people there now, including yourself. And yeah, I mean, we're here for it. And we know that this is a place that we go to on the daily basis. So Washington, D.C., obviously, I know that's a big component. I started getting to that a little bit before with CDF. That seems to be the another differentiating things about CDF is that they are in Washington, D.C. and they are trying to get things passed. And have you been a part of that? Have you witnessed it? What are you seeing as it relates to CDF? Because that's how we can maybe make some serious change, hopefully. But I know a lot of things have been delayed as a result of the pandemic for good reason and for obvious reasons. But and then you had election. And so there's a lot happening. But as it relates to CDF and the relationship with Washington, D.C., what have you seen there?
So I've never had the privilege really of going there. I've never been able to go down to when they've been at Capitol Hill. I've watched Maryland's presentations there. I know we have coming up also, which if people want to register online, Advocacy Day, you're able to register for that online to check it out. For me, again, I just fall back on the fact that I watched Maryland present and everything that goes through there and the work they put in for the advocacy on Capitol Hill. I don't know if I've ever seen anyone and a group push so hard to advocate so far up the ladder than I've seen with CDF. And again, I've never been able to be there in person, which...
But you're aware of it. Whether you're there or not isn't even the point. It's like you're witnessing it, you're seeing it, and you can paint that picture to say like, yeah, no, this is really happening.
Yeah, and it's cool to see that because again, they're advocating on behalf of so many people and you see how far up they've gone and how much work they put into it and where they're standing. When you see Marilyn giving testimony, it's fascinating to know that this is that far along and we're that much closer to having resolution, you know, medical, like you said, things done for us in the community. And here are the people behind it that are pushing to the wall.
Yeah. You've been a part of giving back, raising money for celiac. I saw your water bottle project, right? 100,000 bottles of clean water. You're doing all of this. Was it because of your journey of with Crohn's disease and celiac that led you down this? And then all of a sudden, because everything I read about you, you got your consulting group, Craig Pinto Consulting. You're helping so many people out. And it's real. And you Guinness Book of World Records for fuel kicking. Like, talk to us about that. Like, where did this come from for you to have this giving back mentality?
That really started with, I'd say, at that juncture of, like I mentioned before, looking in the mirror and seeing like a shell of my body, essentially, and what I was. That really started with that. Once I got my health back or started working towards my health in that sense, and started really putting back pieces into place of what I loved, right? Like I loved sports. I loved being involved with teams and coaching and kind of got back around that. And I touched on it, you know, I'd left Hofstra University as a junior, right? And I left college completely, but I still had the ability to kick a football, right? Like it was a while later, 7, 8 years later, But I started kind of getting back into good health and working out again and kicking again and around some guys that were helping me out. And I had the ability to play arena football for two seasons, right? Like, actually, we were down there in North Carolina for a game, I think was one of our, I forget where we were at because it was 11 years ago now. But so what ended up happening was I played arena for two seasons, right? 2009 and 2010. 2010, I was fortunate enough to have a good season, much better than 2009. But a friend of mine, we were talking about it, and he was same thing, you know, he was doing stuff with locally in the community. And I was telling him, man, like, I was beyond grateful to be where I was. I was doing some local speaking events and talking about celiac disease and Crohn's disease and feeling really good, honestly, that I had a low point, right? Like, I know it sounds weird feeling good that I had a low point, but I felt good that I had a low point that I looked back at and said, like, okay, this was like a turning point, or it's also a point where I know that I hit a struggle point. But now here I was 8 years later, and I was doing something I dreamt of doing out of college, right? So I still had the ability to work as hard as I could work to get to where I was. So what ended up happening, I finished up that second season and again, kicking around ideas like, how could I do more for the celiac community? How could I get involved? And I did this thing, you know, I connected with Guinness World Records in 2010. They were like, you know, we have a field goal kicking world record, most field goals in 12 hours. You kick more than 500, you set the world record, we send you a plaque. And for me, I'm like, at that age, at that time, like, Guinness World Records, I'm like, I'm thinking of like the person with the nails and like the people on the motorcycles. Right. Like, this is the coolest thing ever, right? Like, I used to read it when I was a kid. Sure. So for me, like 100%, I'm like, count me in, get me a field. I'll be there with my cleats on. Like, I was super excited. So what I did was really tied that to a fundraiser. And in my mind, I'm like, I could tie this in a way where I could show like longstanding physical activity for somebody who has celiac and Crohn's, right? I'm doing like a marathon event. I'm going to push my body to the limit. And I want to raise money for people that, again, at that time, 2010, it was starting to kind of take off, right? Stores were popping up, products were popping up. So for me, it was like perfect storm of how do I do something out of the box? How can I raise attention and awareness, right, for what's going on? But how do we kind of make this thing move? And that was very cool, man. I mean, that was my first world record. I had 717, you know, I kicked 717 per day. But then I was like obsessed, right? Like, it was a small success. Then the following year, I did the most field goals in 24 hours, right? Like, I went back to Guinness. I'm like, I want to do it again. But what do you have for me? Like, I'm not doing my own thing over. Like, I'm not going to break my own record. Like, give me something new. And then they, you know, most field goals in 24 hours. I had to make 1,000. So that day was forever long. But for me, again, it was like the opportunity. Like, I just kept thinking, like, I know people go through a lot worse than I go through. I know some people don't experience what I go through, but at the end of the day, it's about like a personal journey and putting yourself through these things to potentially help somebody else, right? That's coming along the journey after us. And yeah, like, I tied the fundraising component to that again, raised more money locally. And it was just like obsessive, right? So at that point, you know, my friend, the same friend that I work with out here, who's just in the community a lot, he said, you know, why don't you do something, start your own small foundation, because clearly people were into it. They liked the sports component and the advocacy component. And that's really how it took off, man. Like, I got into fundraising at that point. Like, I went back to school. Actually, I finished schooling in 2010, my bachelor's that I had stopped, right? I went back to school in Manhattan and I finished my bachelor's at NYU. And then once this started, like, this football stuff took off, the Guinness Records, there was a master's degree program there in nonprofit management. And I was like, this is still the perfect storm of whatever is going on in life. So like, I just kind of attacked that too. And from there, it's just been like an ever-long obsession, right? Especially, you know, celiac disease more so than anything. Obviously, fundraising is important and key to everything. But I think the biggest component that I love, and even now, you know, this past year, I did another Guinness World Record, which is my last because I'm just flat out of gas at this point. Like,
the leg is shot. Yeah.
Yeah. It was 2018. I did the most, like, most field goals in 1 minute. And then this past year, we switched to our virtual turkey trot, which is our staple event, right? And I did the most field goals in an hour, which was a component of that to raise some money towards that. And that was it. Like, I blew out like body parts. And yeah. Figured, like, really, I thought of my body as like guitar strings popping, like, yeah, as I was kind of going on with myself. But I got through that. And I'm like, you know what? It was exactly 10 years to the day of my first one, to my fourth one, right? So I finished my last one. I thought about it. I'm like, I started this 10 years ago. This is my last one here. But again, like, similar to that CDF, like, that straight line. Like, I always wanted to do it for the right reasons and for the right purpose. And it was always to make sure at the end of the day, it helped somebody. And again, with this, like, you know, people had reached out and just share their stories. Like, I love that component of it. And being able to dive in and learn people's stories and having strangers like, hey, my son has celiac and he loves to play basketball. What did you do? People that I met for 2 minutes. You start to learn about people and it's that comfort of community again. And that drove me constantly to want to keep myself involved, obviously in the celiac community, in the fundraising community, and even in different projects. You know, like you mentioned, like water bottles. I did that with a friend of mine where it's recognizing communities of need and sometimes communities that fall off the radar in certain senses. And, you know, you want to make sure that they have a voice or they feel like they're not forgotten, right? It all ties back to that. And that's really, for me, I love working with nonprofit organizations and I love working with organizations where when I dive in and I meet people and then I meet who the organization serves, it's like a total like love affair every single time. Like I love the organizations. I love the mission. You know, those types of things are important to me. And going forward, that's really where I see everything I do going forward. It's that kind of like, I get up at the end of the day, it's where's the mission? Where's the goal and how are we getting there and the people that I'm surrounded by that are most important?
And you had to get there. You talked about this, like going to a low point. And you hear this a lot in history. If we study people and psychology, that there is these moments, these points, and they could be long periods of time like we're dealing with right now. And there's a lot of people at a low point and how do we deal with it? And how do you inspire yourself, not just for a few days or a few years, but for a lifetime like you're doing? And to get out there and whatever that is, I'm fascinated by that because you see it a lot. As an entrepreneur, you're going through these ups and downs, just that's in a vacuum in your business. And then you have your family and everything else and your health and parents and kids and all that stuff. So it's fascinating that you had to go there. You would never choose it. You would never wish it on anyone, but it took you there. And what are you going to do about it? And it's like, I pictured you like leaning into this wall and just continuing to lean into it and put it, my wall might never fall down. But it won't stop you and you'll keep pushing into it. And then the stacking of things that you're doing where like this football, sports, this interest, celiac, other foundations, community. I mean, you stack all these things together. It's what you're all about because it puts all of your passions and interests and needs all into one. It doesn't let you stop leaning into whatever it is that you want to lead into. I mean, we talk about stacking all the time because it's just, it's a fascinating thing when you can stack these different talents up. In talents or interests or passions or whatever that is, and then bring that and put it out there because it's inspiring to say, that's the reason why we keep doing it. That's why I want to keep having these conversations. That's why I want to hear these stories. And maybe it just helps someone else. It shouldn't always be self-serving. It should just be because it's just conversations that you want to be having or whatever that might be. But it is interesting that you have to go to these places. You have to go to these low points. Like you hear the belly of the beast type of thing. You right. have to go there.
It's true, yeah. man. It's crazy. I'm sure, you know, when you experience these things, like, when I was a kid, right, I'm like, why am I going to like birthday parties, carrying around medication bottles? I'm embarrassed. I'm taking pills here and doing whatever. And then celiac, I'm embarrassed. I wouldn't trade that for the world. Like I'm grateful for those experiences. When these things started happening 10 years after that, I was grateful for the experiences, right? Like I don't know if I would necessarily know perseverance the way I do learning it as a 10-year-old or 12-year-old and then a 20-year-old and then a 30-year-old feeling like you're out of the game and getting back into a sport where everyone is just coming out of college, right? Like I was 31 years old and I was the old man, right? I was the old man. But like the gratitude I had for what I went through. And like I said, in the moments, you're like, I wouldn't wish this on anyone. Why is this happening? You question so many things. Could I have eaten differently? Could I have done what's happening? When I look back at it now, the relationships I've made and the paths you crossed, right? Like the effects that people had on you, none of that happens without what I went through. And that's why I'm like, and crossing paths with Marilyn and Elaine back in 2013 and leading to this now, here we are 8 years later, getting to be and be a part of that and really see that from the inside. It's things that I'm grateful for, that those belly of the beast moments, right? Like still to these days, I'm sure your wife and your kids can attest, like there are days where you don't know what you ate, if something was cross-contaminated, and you're just like, gosh, why again? Like, why is this still going on, right? But you get through it and you have conversations and you're able to share. And sometimes that helps somebody else out, right? Like you have that conversation and they don't feel alone or they feel helped at least. And
how do we get these types of, I mean, I guess this is one of the ways we do it, to let other people know that they can do something along the lines of what you did. I mean, it doesn't have to be this extreme thing either. but people are needing support, right? Like you talk about advocacy, they're needing support in some small ways. It might be a Facebook group. It might be going to celiac.org. It might be hearing this podcast or a clip of this podcast and you run across it on Instagram for who knows. But there's a lot of people out there and you might know the numbers, but there's the undiagnosed that are out there, which is way more than who knows. Like there's people out there that have no idea what celiac is.
Right.
So there's that awareness to say, how do we get tested? And then chances are, it seems to be, I don't know what the word is, but there's certain communities that might never know about the celiac testing that even exists. Maybe it's more affluent. I don't know. So how do we get the testing in these places? When do doctors start just making it a part of their routine blood work? Because it's not like, even for my daughter, who's my middle child, when she had tested, we still had to go through some like questionnaires, and this was during the pandemic, we had to go through the Zoom calls. And is this someone who should get tested? My wife has it. My younger daughter has it. Yes, she should get tested. If it wasn't for my wife, my youngest daughter had been sick like 3 times in a row. It's about a year ago, last January, February. This is in 2020. And the third time, and she just had noticed something and said, I want to get her tested for celiac. If my wife isn't there, she's not getting tested. I was talking to her about it yesterday. It blows me away that she was able to recognize that I think she might have celiac and I want to get her tested. Within the week, she was tested and her endoscopy confirmed like it was open shut case. That's not normal. Like, because if my wife didn't have it, we wouldn't know that. And we'd be dealing like, I don't know why she keeps getting sick and what's going on.
Right. And then you'd be running circles and medications and things that are possibly harming your body while you're trying to figure out what's good for your body, right? Like my personal experience here, as far as that goes, like I know when I had started doing a lot of the football stuff and as I started kind of growing up through a different medical practice here who I was taking care of me. And as I progressed in kind of my celiac journey, the doctors I worked with, their practice expanded to include celiac disease testing. And they included that kind of in their, what they look for, guidelines, right? Like, so I don't know if it takes people within a certain practice or people to advocate for other people to say, like, this is something that we really have to look for and pay attention to and not just be dismissive about symptoms as something else. And that falls back on self-advocacy, right? Or like somebody standing up for someone to say something. And it's tough because at the end of the day, I trust the doctors and I trust doctors I go to with everything. If they kept telling me something and I kept believing it and I didn't look for something that was going on, I would drift on forever just believing what was being told to me without knowing what was going on. So it's a difficult spot. And I hope too, like you said, with like the affluent areas, you really hope that celiac disease is something that is top of mind when you hear symptoms, right? Like you go through the list of symptoms and it's not GERD, here's medication. IBS, see you later, right? Like it's not just like this dismissive, you're stressed, you're worried. It becomes like, okay, if they test you for IBD, they could test you for celiac. You know, that type of like, I guess, pattern and process to become top of mind instead of like, oh my gosh, we found it, it's celiac, right? And you're like at the end of your rope at that point.
Sure. And they don't know what to do a lot of times too. Like if it is celiac, so then like you said before, that we've seen it to where like doctors are like, what do we do with it?
My first doctor gave me the wrong food to eat. Like he said, I think you could eat semolina. I'm not sure if that's okay. Like I walked out and like, oh my gosh. Like,
yeah.
So yeah, we definitely need some sort of,
yeah.
I mean, it's great that we have that advocacy.
It is. And the searches, the grocery stores, the food, there are options. It's like, I'm seeing it very clearly. It still takes me longer in the grocery store because I'm really looking for the fine print. I'll need glasses at some point one day, but it's there. If you take a second, you'll find it. And the search results in Google, for example, I mean, it'll come up and there's conversations being had. And that's just the thing. And I think it's just, it's even the word, right? The word in and of itself, celiac, there's no S to it, right? Like once we have a more of an understanding to it, I think it's something that people, oh, I've heard of that. Like I've been to a restaurant before when they have to turn around and start asking questions. I'm like, okay, well, this isn't going to work. And kind of going at the beginning, but it's a, I have a lot of faith in what's happening and having people like yourself and Marilyn, the organization of CDF, and then seeing people like my wife and then my kids. And there is a, like, same thing with my wife, like she would never have chose this, and the way she's leaned into it and what she's doing is, I know there's people out there that are doing this and that's going to have impact on celiac in the future of it. And again, this goes back as well to the thing that I think about a lot is, as someone who's in any aspect of their life, people are going through things. And often we have no idea. And celiac is one of those things because you could walk around and be like, wow, you look great and all this stuff. And they had no idea. And like, well, you look good, so it must be fine. And it's this hidden thing and you don't understand it. And that's not just celiac. There's a lot of things going out there and mental health and all of this stuff. And so it seems like, and we've talked about this a little bit already, of perseverance, of pushing through, of finding your inspiration, because I'm fascinated by that. And you see it in sports as well. How do you go and play in that next game? You just missed 3 field goals the game before and the people are talking, the teammates are talking, or the fans or whoever. How do you keep showing up? How do you keep pushing through? And how do you use these things to say, you know what, this was a low point. This was a tough time, but I'm going to push through it. And because I see it with business owners or, like I said, anybody in their life at any aspect, they're all dealing with something. It could be a sick family member. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. That's something that I look, and I had mentioned this before, like just different people that I've seen and come across, their dad has Parkinson's disease and their mom gets diagnosed with Parkinson's. It doesn't mean they can stop doing what they're doing. They have to keep going. They have no choice. And then they find it in themselves to just inspire other people and succeed. And so I just say all that because I'm talking to someone who's clearly done that and it's amazing. And it's inspiring to me to say, we could be having a bad day, but you know what? Get over yourself. Keep going. Keep pushing through. And I mean, that's what you're doing, but I'll just let you take it wherever you want from there.
Yeah, no, you're 100% spot on, right? Like it's that resiliency. And it's the, like for me, when you were talking about missing multiple field goals and the eye-opening part, like when I was in arena for my second season, right? I had a couple of bad stretches. And then all of a sudden at the next practice, there's another kicker there. And you're like, oh my gosh, like is this, you know, the season is 14 games long. And it was game 6. I'm like, am I out after this? Because you're gone in like the drop of a hat. So then it's like, all right, refocus, stop thinking about whatever. And I think my focus and my play football-wise, I cleared up and I stayed more focused when I said, you know what? I know I could do this. I've done it a million times. And let's go out. And regardless of the results, I'm doing what I can to make sure. I put myself in the position to make it. Whether I make it or not, that's to be seen. And that really took so much more pressure off me when I was playing. I probably played the best ball of my life at that point when I went out there and I didn't care that somebody was screaming something from the stands or I didn't. When I walked out there and said, you know what? These guys trust me. I trust myself. I practice a million hours. I made this kick a million times. If I miss it, I'm going to get another chance, right? Like, and that's what helped me. I had a little less stress in each kick, right? There were, of course, end of game, like game winning potential ones that all of a sudden it's like palpable. But everything else became this like, okay, I've worked my butt off for this. I put myself in this position. I've missed a million field goals, but this one is this one. This isn't the missing, right? This is this moment. And that helped me out. You know, that helped a lot. And even going into this last world record thing, and it's funny, and you touched on it, and it actually brought something up in my mind when I was trying to work out and train for this last world record just to make sure my legs worked, right? Because I haven't kicked in like a year and I just want to get out there. Where I live, the field's about 2 or 3 blocks from me. And I would go out there before work, probably about 7:30 in the morning. And it was in September. So going to October and out here, you know, it's cold in the morning, 7 a.m. And I swear this, it's just coincidental that you mentioned it, but I walked out, there's an older man there walking almost every single morning who had Parkinson's disease on the track, right? I'd walk out with a giant bag of footballs and I'm like, still groggy, 7 o'clock, but every time, and the same guy there. And by a couple of weeks in, I'd chat him up. How's he doing? Every morning he'd walk. He'd, well, you know, keep me posted. Let me know how you do after all this. And it was one of those things where I'm like you said, you don't know what people are going through. You don't know whatever kind of helps them get through the day. But then you see kind of strength in different ways in people. And that brings it to that inspiration type of like feeling, right? Like, and here I was, I'm like, oh my gosh, is my leg going to kick this ball or am I going to whatever? But I see this guy every morning at 7:30, no doubt about it, walking the track, just making sure he does his half hour and he puts his miles in, and he's dealing with Parkinson's disease, right? Yeah. Like it's something different, but he's got his battle.
Yeah.
And here's the two of us, the only people for miles on this field, but it's one of those moments where you think about it and it's like, again, you're grateful for what you have. And I think you're able to kind of put in perspective and deal with what you're dealing with. And it helped a lot. Like again, like, it's helped me throughout everything. You know, that's really been kind of how I've stayed the course is gratitude. I'm grateful that I'm not in surgery because of my Crohn's. You know, I have Crohn's. I'm grateful I'm not at certain levels. You know, I have celiac. I'm grateful I met the people I did because of it. I wouldn't be on this conversation if I didn't deal with this stuff. So for me, it's about the mentality of it. I know the physical parts come with it, but it's more about the mental aspect of kind of like gunning at it in a straight line, you know?
Yeah. There's an awareness you have then from that, right? You're aware of how you're feeling, perhaps just like, you know what? I'm not feeling it today. And that's okay. Whatever that is, and having those conversations, those meetups, maybe it's a book that you read or people that you follow and pay attention to. And again, history, whatever that might be, it's all something to pay attention to, and where everyone's working on it. And you said it, he's got his battle. Everyone has their battle. What is that? And can we talk about it? And there's, if it's not publicly or not on a podcast, there's therapists, there's conversations, there's organizations, there's state, whether you talk about it or not, maybe you just read it. Maybe it's a post that CDF has put out or Marilyn Geller speaking on Capitol Hill. And it's inspiring to see, you know what, there's people making changes out there, and let's all be a part of it and get that out there.
Yeah.
Craig, I can't thank you enough for spending the time to chat about all this, to being vulnerable, to sharing your story and Guinness Book of World Records. And Guinness Book of World Records, it's incredible because that's a brand putting out content to then tell stories. And they're just exotic, wild stories, and they can come up with things like you said. How many kicks can you make in 12 hours, in 1 minute? So it's fascinating because that's what this is. It's just content, but it's specific. It's for people that might not know about it, that need to know about it, that will know about it, that want to know more about it. And you're doing amazing things. And it's an inspiration to just have this conversation to feature you on this.
Likewise, man. I appreciate you having me on here. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my own kind of like journey with this. And again, hopefully there's anything I'm ever able to do, and you know, we'll keep in touch, and anything I can ever help out with, I'd be more than happy to be able to help with anything I can.
Absolutely. Where can they connect with you, learn more about you?
About me personally, I mean, you'll go through celiac.org. My email's up on there. If anyone ever wants to just reach out and say hello, kind of ask questions, would love to engage with people. We have our local events. We always love to have people come to local events. I love that just because I know we're not in person right now, but when we hopefully get back to that, love the interactions and learning people's stories. So would love to have people get involved, reach out and be a part of it however they can.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Craig. Thank you again.
You're welcome, man. Thank you for having me.
One of my favorite things about CADSource is the opportunity to chat with amazing business leaders and entrepreneurs. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you want to connect, you can find me on LinkedIn or visit us at CADSource.com. Thank you for listening to this CADSource production, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time. This episode exists because of CADSource. CADSource is your content team. You know how many business leaders need help communicating their story? That's what we do. Content strategy, creation, and distribution for business leaders. This provides opportunities, relationships, and a platform for you and your business. Why do we do this? Because at CADSource, we exist to help you create and share amazing content. And yes, you should have a podcast. We'll help you. Learn more by visiting CADSContent.com.